Today is February 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Mario Ritter Jr. in Washington. Coming up,
China's an economic powerhouse on the rise. They don't play by the rule book, though. Russia, on the other hand, is almost a wounded, declining bear.
Also ahead, Thai politics gets shaken up with the addition of a member of the royal family. Venezuela's interim president Juan Guaido has appealed for international support to bring democracy to his country, and relations between Italy and France grow tenser over immigration and domestic issues. It's all on today's International Edition. Thai politics has been shaken by the nomination of Princess Obonrat Mahidon as a candidate for prime minister in March elections. The move overturns a Thai tradition that the royal family takes no part in the country's politics. The leader of the Thai Raksachat party announced the decision at a news conference Friday. The decision to seek office for a party linked with former Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawat also has drawn attention. Thaksin's party has won every Thai election since 2001, but has been ousted twice by the country's military. A bitter split exists between supporters of Thaksin and his sister, former Prime Minister Yingluck Shinawat, and political forces in Bangkok and among the military. Prime Minister and former General Prayut Chan-o-cha registered his nomination for upcoming elections on Friday. Complicating the candidacy of the princess is Article 112 of Thailand's constitution. The law punishes insulting, defaming, or threatening the royal family with up to 15 years of prison. It is unclear if the law strictly applies to the princess because she lost some of her privileges after marrying an American commoner. But she is seen as popular among the Thai public. Paul Chambers is a political expert at Narawaswan University in Thailand.
It's not just royal legitimacy that she has. She also has the fact that, she's allied herself with Thaksin. And so people who want to have populist measures would be voting for her as well.
The princess is said to be close to her brother, the king, who took the throne in October 2016. Venezuela's interim president, Juan Guaido, has appealed for international support to bring democracy to Venezuela without spilling any more blood. The United States has accused Venezuela's former strongman, Nicolas Maduro, of blocking humanitarian aid to his desperately needy people. VOA's Zlatica Hoki reports that while many call for Maduro to leave, he still enjoys the support of Cuba and Russia.
Guaido said in an interview aired Thursday that he would accept mediation by Pope Francis, requested by former President Nicolas Maduro, but stipulated that any dialogue must start with negotiating the terms of Maduro's exit.
I am reaching out to everyone, including the Holy Father, anyone that can help us end the rule of a usurper, and that truly free elections are held in Venezuela as soon as possible.
So far, Maduro has refused to step down despite massive protests that have left dozens of people dead. In addition, people are dying from hunger, says Guaido.
Every day we are counting human lives. Every day a child's life is lost because it does not have enough to eat, or its future is in danger because it does not have enough nutrients to develop cognitively, physiologically, or psychologically. This all has a limit. Time is running out for us to achieve this change.
The United States and about 50 other countries have recognized Guaido as interim president. Newly appointed U.S. Special Envoy for Venezuela, Elliot Abrams, warned Thursday that Maduro is holding his people hostage.
While Guaido calls for humanitarian assistance for the people of Venezuela, Maduro continues to block unhindered access to international humanitarian assistance and denies Venezuelans the basic necessities they direly need unless they declare loyalty to him.
U.S. President Donald Trump has not ruled out the possibility of a military intervention in Venezuela. In an exclusive, first-of-its-kind interview with VOA Thursday, Navy Admiral Craig Fowler, head of the U.S. Southern Command, said reactions of China and Russia to the developments in Venezuela bear watching.
China is an economic powerhouse on the rise, and they have legitimate economic and business interests around the world. They don't play by the rule book, though. Russia, on the other hand, is almost a wounded, declining bear that's lashing out.
And Fowler said Russia is supporting regimes in Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela, and often resorts to spreading anti-U.S. propaganda to strengthen its foothold there. But he said most other South American countries have partnered with the United States to support democracy in the region. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
Navy Admiral Craig Fowler, the new commander of U.S. Southern Command, spoke exclusively to VOA in his first formal interview as commander. He spoke with VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb about Venezuela, as well as Russian and Chinese influence in the region, among other issues.
Let's talk about Russia and China. What are they doing in Venezuela? What are you seeing? I know you touched on reports of sending in military contractors. You mentioned earlier how they had sent bombers in December, where the United States sent a hospital ship. But what else are you seeing? And are you seeing the Chinese involved in this Venezuelan crisis in any matter?
Well, I think as I mentioned earlier, and I'll talk about it again, is just Russian media efforts in their different media outlets to spread disinformation about what the United States' intentions are and try to drum up fears that run counter to what the reality is. And the reality is we're good partners.
Are you concerned that Russia might do something in Venezuela like it did in Syria? Like we saw how they propped up the Assad regime there. Could that happen again?
I think with Russia, anything's possible. The National Defense Strategy calls out competition with Russia and China specifically as areas of focus. We've really aligned and done a lot of thinking, planning, and resourcing to those. I couldn't predict what Russia will do, and I wouldn't want to. We've seen what they've done, and I think we have to be prepared for what that might happen in the future.
China, are you legitimately concerned that they could use their IT infrastructure to spy on the United States and its allies in the hemisphere?
Well, I think that there's lots of recent evidence that that's more than just a concern. It's a reality. And I, as a military person, that one, it's tasked to look for ways to share information, share intelligence when required, exercise together. Now, that's the foundation of our relationships, really, is this information sharing, our exercising, our education. We have to be able to trust that that's going to be used by our partners appropriately. And if China's deeply involved and entrenched in a way that we can't trust that data, that's really concerning for us. So it's their access, and it's their IT influence, and frankly, it's some of the no strings attached education and schooling that they offer. And they're playing that against us. They'll go into a country and they'll say, "We don't put conditions on you, the U.S. Just come do with us." Well, that's a ticket to playing in an autocratic rule book. That's not a democratic rule book, and so we play by the rules in the United States.
That was Admiral Craig Fowler, the commander of this U.S. Southern Command, in an exclusive interview with Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. Italy's Interior Minister Matteo Salvini said yesterday he is open to meeting with French government officials to discuss differences between the two countries after France recalled its ambassador. Salvini's criticism of French President Emmanuel Macron is partly to blame for the tiff that prompted France to recall Ambassador Christian Massé. French officials were also angered by Italy's Deputy Prime Minister meeting Tuesday. Reporter Catherine Field is covering the story. She spoke with my colleague Kim Lewis about the latest developments.
It was earlier this week when one of the Italian deputy prime ministers traveled to France from Italy and was actually here in France meeting members of the Gilets Jaunes, Yellow Vest protest movement. Now, this protest movement has been quite at the forefront for the last few months, anti-government rhetoric. More importantly, they're getting ready to fight European elections later this spring here in Europe. So it was seen as an attempt by the Italian deputy prime minister to interfere on the one hand with this electoral campaign that's going to come up for the European elections, and also that it was seen that perhaps he was stoking up another populist movement in France. And the French government really felt that this was too much. This was interfering with the internal affairs of the French government, and that was really caused them to see red. And it's extraordinary that neighbouring countries, European countries with a long history of economic, social and cultural ties should suddenly pull back the ambassador. So it was just really the straw that broke the camel's back for the French government.
Are there some other issues there, such as the migrant issue and maybe policies towards Libya?
Indeed, one of the big issues that, of course, found favour with the Italian electorate was the number of migrants who were coming into France, particularly on those ships that were bringing them and saving them in the Mediterranean. Now, Italy says that France isn't pulling its weight. It hasn't been taking enough of those migrants that have been on the ships and has been leaving Italy to look after them themselves in a way of saying, you're not being very European about it. On top of that, the Italians have been saying that France is pushing migrants back over the border from France to Italy, ones who come over the Alps. That's true. France has been pushing those back. And on top of that, the Italian, particularly the Populist League and the Five Star Movement, have been accusing France of, if you like, underhand dealing, particularly in Libya, and particularly French interests, such as in business, has been really, if you like, impoverishing the locals there. And it's been very stinging criticism of those French policies to Libya. So there's been a lot of this coming up, but particularly with the migrant crisis, it feeds into this concern in Italy that they're on the front line with the migrant crisis, that no one else is helping out.
So actually, just looking at the French country, is it worse under the leadership of Macron?
It was a little testy under the previous president, Nicolas Sarkozy. He, of course, had his problems with Silvio Berlusconi. But Emmanuel Macron had came to power just as these populist movements were taking off in various parts of Europe. And Emmanuel Macron has set himself up as the democratic European leader who is able to stand above this populism, is actually setting himself up to be able to save Europe from going down this road of far-right, anti-immigrant populist movements. And in particular, just 1 year ago, Emmanuel Macron, the French president, when he addressed the two houses of the French parliament, he described a populist movement as being like leprosy. So on the one hand, you do have France taking such a firm stand against these particular populist party. On the other hand, inside Italy, for this populist party, Emmanuel Macron is a really easy target. He stands out as one of the elite, the European elite, that they say you're riding roughshod over the working class. Emmanuel Macron is a banker. He's from a wealthy family. He's always promoting industry. He's always promoting the titans of industry, the supporters of the League and the Five Star Populist Movement. This is a really low-hanging fruit that they can just pick up and they can say, yes, Emmanuel Macron, the French president, he's an enemy of the workers. Let's go and attack him.
That was reporter Catherine Field in Paris speaking with my colleague Kim Lewis. Among the world's top stories, six people are under arrest in Australia following a joint operation with the U.S. that resulted in the largest ever seizure of methamphetamine in the United States. And fans remember legendary baseball Hall of Famer Frank Robinson, the first black manager in the U.S. major leagues. Robinson died yesterday in Los Angeles at 83. Expanded coverage of these and other stories are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Who killed Jamal Khashoggi? The U.S. Senate has given the President Donald Trump's administration until today to try to answer that question, but the State Department has not said it will meet that deadline. Some in Congress suspect Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman is responsible for the October killing of the Washington Post columnist. VOA diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain explains.
The reported killing and dismemberment of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi happened 4 months ago in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. But the question of who ordered it remains unresolved for the Saudi kingdom and for the United States. President Trump has refused to say if he believes Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman knew in advance about Khashoggi's killing, saying previously, maybe he did, maybe he didn't. Both he and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo have repeatedly spoken of the special relationship between the U.S. and the Saudi kingdom. The U.S. sanctioned 17 Saudi Arabian officials following Khashoggi's death, but not the Crown Prince, who denies any involvement. Then chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee Bob Corker and the panel's ranking Democrat, Senator Bob Menendez, triggered the Global Magnitsky Act in October. This U.S. human rights law gives the president 120 days to decide whether to impose sanctions on any foreign person he determines sponsored or was involved in the disappearance of Khashoggi. Friday is the deadline. Corker said he believes the Saudi Crown Prince ordered and monitored the brutal killing. On Thursday, State Department Deputy Spokesman Robert Palladino declined to say whether the Trump administration will comply with the law and meet the Friday deadline.
We will continue to consult with the Congress and work to hold accountable those that are responsible for Jamal Khashoggi's killing.
Human rights groups and the Committee to Protect Journalists are calling on the White House to demand accountability and to share information on Khashoggi's murder with the public to send a strong message to Saudi Arabia. Cindy Sain, VOA News, the State Department.
Measles is spreading in the U.S. As of February 5th, there were 50 cases in Washington State and 5 in Houston, Texas. New cases are being added daily. Health officials, including the U.S. Surgeon General, are urging parents to get their children vaccinated. VOA's Carol Pearson reports most of the cases are in unvaccinated children.
Measles was eliminated in the U.S. 19 years ago. The only cases now are those that are imported from other countries, but that's happening with greater frequency. Dr. Camille Sabella is a pediatric infectious disease specialist at the Cleveland Clinic.
Measles is incredibly contagious. Once it gets around the community, it's very difficult because it's airborne.
18 states allow parents not to vaccinate their children if they have moral, personal, or philosophical objections to it. A measles outbreak in the northwestern state of Washington has health officials scrambling to contain it. Dr. Jason Hanley sees emergency cases at the medical center Peace Health.
I hope I'm wrong, but I think the cases are going to get more frequent and spread throughout the country from this epicenter.
Rural areas in the U.S. tend to have higher numbers of unvaccinated children, but there are significant numbers in cities such as Houston, Austin, and Seattle, where immunization rates are lower than in other U.S. cities. Houston just reported 2 new cases of measles in children under the age of 2, bringing the total to 5 as of February 6th. Doctors, including U.S. Surgeon General Jerome Adams, are urging parents to get their children vaccinated.
As the United States Surgeon General, I want everyone to know that the best protection against measles is getting vaccinated.
The measles vaccine is almost 100% effective. Doctors recommend that children get 2 doses.
One dose of vaccine, about 95% of children will become protected against measles. The reason that we give a second dose is because about 5% of children do not respond to the first dose. So with two doses, over 99% of children are protected against measles.
Measles makes people very sick, and it's especially dangerous for young children. At Children's National Medical Center, Dr. Roberta DiBiase works as an infectious disease specialist.
One-third of those cases will end up hospitalized, and that may be due to a variety of complications.
Complications such as pneumonia or encephalitis, a swelling of the brain, can be deadly or lead to permanent disability. That's why doctors urge parents to get their children vaccinated. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA's International Edition.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music, and Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists with the U.S. National Centers for Environmental Information found that Earth's magnetic North Pole is quickly shifting from the Canadian Arctic to Siberia. Due to these unplanned variations, the U.S. agency was forced to release an updated version of its World Magnetic Model, or WMM, a year ahead of schedule. The WMM is described as a wide depiction of the Earth's magnetic field and is usually updated every 5 years. The next update wasn't due until the end of 2019. Earth's magnetic fields are generated deep in our planet's core. Scientists say the Earth's rotation causes the liquid iron core to spin and form whirlpools, producing electric currents that generate the magnetic fields. The WMM is used in a variety of applications, including accurate compass apps, maps, and GPS services. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Former Michigan Representative John Dingell, the longest-serving member of Congress in U.S. history, died yesterday at the age of 92. In a statement, Dingell's wife, Debbie, who ran for and won his legislative seat after he retired in 2014, said he died at home in Dearborn, Michigan. Dingell had been in declining health for some time. Dingell was known as a fierce defender of the auto industry and an opponent of government waste and fraud. Dingell is survived by his wife, two daughters, and son, one of whom served 15 years in the Michigan legislature, and several grandchildren. You have been listening to International Edition. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, and engineer Nick Ivanoff. I'm Mario Ritter Jr. in Washington. Enjoy your day.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.